Welcome everyone to Wise Talk. This is Maripulse's monthly podcast. We provide perspectives on leadership. Today we're excited to welcome Dr. Stephanie Johnson. Thank you for being here, who is in Venezuela right now. That's very cool. She's an assistant professor of management at the University of Colorado Boulder, and it's the lead school of business that she's at. She's authored many articles and book chapters in both academic and applied outlets. Her first book, Inclusify, The Power of Uniqueness and Belonging to Build Innovative Teams, reveals the unexpected ways that well-intentioned leaders undermine their teams, explains how to also recognize the myths and misperceptions that drive these behaviors, and provides practical strategies to become an inclusifier. She has presented her work at over 170 meetings around the world, including at the White House for a 2016 Summit on Diversity in Corporate America, on the National Equal Pay Day, and the 2016 Harvard Negotiation and Leadership Conference. She's also a frequent contributor to HBR, Forbes, and Bloomberg. So thanks again so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
We've done this for 15, 16 years now, so every month. So I always ask the first question, which is, why did you decide to write the book? I read your bio. That's nice. But I want to know, like, what inspired you?
So I study leadership and specifically what leaders can do to create diverse workplaces. And so everything from selection practices to mentoring, all the way up to like corporate vision, setting goals, strategy. And I have the opportunity to work with some of the best companies in the world. And probably around 2016, around that Equal Pay Day event at the White House, like, it was really starting to pick up energy in corporate America to invest in diversity. And so companies were like, what do we do? And so I had lots of solutions. You can remove names from resumes, recruit in this way, you know, have diverse slates for your board searches. Mm-hmm. And many of them were doing this. And then we kind of saw this, I don't know, I guess it was unexpected result of some of those companies were doing all of the right things. And it was taken off and they were showing great return on investment and their stock prices were going up. And at other companies, it was like the opposite. They had increased turnover, more conflict, it just wasn't working out. And so I'm like, well, after they get there, you have to actually continue investing in people.
That's right.
Because half of this equation is around the idea of inclusion. And at the time, that wasn't a topic the way it is today.
Yeah.
And so I started doing research on like, what's differentiating, and found kind of the answers is diversity without inclusion is just going to lead to turnover. And diversity plus inclusion results in all these positive outcomes. And so to communicate this to a broad audience, I wanted to put it in paper so people could read it, pick it up, get ideas, and hopefully change their mind. And then I'll tell you the real reason is I am obsessed with pop management books.
That's the real reason.
I read every single one. I love them. Even I read them as like a high school student. I don't really read fiction, so I read a lot of nonfiction, and I just love pop business books, and my life dream was to write a pop business book.
Well, you must have like a billion in your office or something.
I did. I got rid of them all when I did this move. And so other than giving books to people, which I think is a nice thing to do, I donated everything.
Very cool. I mean, there's a lot of things you could write about in leadership. What prompted you in terms of the passion for diversity and inclusion? Because obviously there's a shift now because we're looking more at belonging and engagement. What was your raison d'etre? Like, what really grabbed you about it?
Like bad data.
Yeah.
First, I consider myself diverse. A human can't really be diverse, but I'm an underrepresented person. I'm like a first generation. My parents didn't go to college. I'm a female, Mexican-American, not your typical business professor, I'd say. So some of these topics just really resonate with me. Like it makes a lot of sense to me how there's not an equal playing field and how there's privilege and advantages and how belonging is a thing and how when you're faking it all the time to fit in, you're not contributing 100% of your mental energy. So I think that definitely contributed, but really it was just like, I'm trying to study leadership and what leaders can do to be effective and how we view leaders. And there's these gaps always. Doesn't matter what study you do, what industry, there's always a difference, usually by gender, because there's just typically historically more women than there are any one minority or person of color group. And so if I'm trying to predict something, I'm trying to predict what makes effective leadership so I can better train the leaders of tomorrow and then, you know, be assertive. You know, you want to assert your vision and unless you're a woman and then being assertive actually negatively impacts you, right? So I'm like, okay, what is going on here? I just need to figure this gender thing out. And again, this is like 2000. And so I can get back to my study of leadership. And then I just like haven't really cracked that, not yet. Mm-hmm. But that's a really spot. It's just like, if you want to be accurate about your data representation, you have to show if there's differences, and you can't make a compelling case when it's like everything I just told you, it's the opposite. If you're, if you happen to be a woman or LGBTQIA or a person with disability, it's like, this is the theories of leadership are written for by.
Right. Exactly. So I want to get into the actual title of your book, because you've coined it, and it's, you know, it's not diversifying, it's not including. So how are you defining inclusify?
Yeah, so it's supposed to signal or make you feel like it's an action, like including people makes you feel like, well, you included me in this Zoom conversation because you sent me a link, but am I speaking? Am I able to contribute? Am I able to give my thoughts and perspectives? People don't really think about second part as including. Including just seems like, well, I let you come in, which is really more like allowing people to have a seat at the table.
Participate. But yeah.
Yeah, that's not really that great, honestly. So it's supposed to signify that. Inclusifying is a conscious and ongoing action to help people experience a sense of belonging while still encouraging them to be their unique and authentic self so they can fully show up and participate and be valued for who they are. The other reason is I feel like that when I talked about increasing diversity for so many years, like increased diversity, people were like not that keen on that term or that idea. Like there's still a lot of backlash around that. Mm. But when you say diversifying, I think people think of like their portfolio, and then you understand why you diversify. It makes you more robust to threat and changes. And in fact, the same thing, I think, with your company. If you have greater diversity, you're going to be more resilient to change, better able to attract new customers and new talent. I think it's the same. It's like if you inclusify, it actually has a benefit, just like it would to your software.
So I'm kind of curious about when you wrote this book, when did you start writing it? When did you finish it in terms of how it kind of collided or didn't with COVID?
It was fully done before the first COVID case.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm actually curious because I think it's even more potent or more important now. I want to talk a little bit about your original intent. Like, what were you thinking in terms of the main tenets of Inclusify? And then I want to then apply it to what's going on right now.
I think it's more relevant today, you know, following George Floyd's murder and just like the increase in corporate attention to diversity issues, none of which is in the book. There's Black Lives Matter, but the older or like more longitudinal movement, but it doesn't include this most recent string of events that has really mobilized people. And it doesn't talk about COVID at all. So I think the principles are the same. And it's just this idea that, but what I find is that most leaders are really well-intentioned when it comes to creating a more inclusive workforce. They're just not quite getting it right. And so it's like a very coaching mindset of like, so here's what you're doing well. You're really great at building belonging on your team. And you're maybe not recognizing that not everyone's the same. And so you need to foster this dissenting viewpoints and bring out people's unique identities. And because realistically, there's people on your team who don't belong, who feel like they don't belong. You want it to look like they do. And I think that's true today too. It just looks a little bit different. There's leaders who are really good at highlighting people's unique identities, but don't always create that cohesive team feeling where you have like a esprit de corps or belonging. Mm-hmm. Just the implementation of how that leader pivots, I think, looks a little bit different in a virtual remote world.
I think that intentionality is not a problem. I mean, I think that most people, especially now, want people to feel belonging. I use the word connection a lot. The paper that I just penned was about making sure that we stay close and connected to our peeps. So I don't think anyone's going to argue with that. You know, even the curmudgeonly, I don't think anyone's going to say we shouldn't want people to feel belonging and we shouldn't want people to feel connected. So given that, like, how do we help people do that? What is some of your advice in terms of making sure that leaders are focusing on that in terms of their practice? Because I think that, again, their mindset is yes, 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 but then there's not enough time, or I'm not sure how to do that, or I feel awkward about it, or we got to get to business and not check in, or, you know.
There's a million, right? There's like a laundry list of things, but some of the ones that rise to the top are things like hiring on culture fit. So you hire people who fit your culture, and then you reinforce that fit all the time because you want to build a tight-knit group. Right. You put everyone in t-shirts. So they're wearing the same outfits and you do the same type of cultural events that everyone likes. And that's great, except you're missing out on a large segment of the population that you could be recruiting. And you've created massive blind spots on your team because everyone's similar. And even more to the point, there's probably someone on that team who isn't similar, but made it through somehow. And every day it feels like they don't actually belong. And so I think it's like, yes, you can have a strong culture, but part of that culture has to be valuing difference. If you're a leader who doesn't value difference, like that's the thing to start focusing on. And then getting some empathy skills, because you're going to have to learn how to integrate difference and have perspective taking of like, well, this is what your experience is like, and it's different than mine. You don't have to do that if everyone's the same as you, right? You're just like, I know what your experience is. I hired you because you have the same college education background and life
right.
experience.
I think people are, and I'm thinking right now about a client, great guy, well-intended, very fast-paced company, had an engineering opening. And so he was going through the motions of getting the engineering people, you know, his recruiters going out there. And I said to him, how many women candidates do you have? I wasn't being snarky. I was just like, how's it going? You know, he's like, he just sort of stopped cold and went, oh my God. He just didn't think of it. And you know, the fact is there's not that many. It's hard to find them, but it takes an extra couple steps or three or four or five steps to find women engineers. But it turns out he hired one and it all worked out. But it's, you know, of course this is one of many people that he's hiring, but what I'm curious from you is, you know, how do we just take, we can take the recruiting example, or we can also just take check-ins. Like, how do we get people to feel their differences? Like, just by merely asking a check-in, like something like, hey, say something about you that makes you feel very creative. Like, what's creative about you, or what's different about you, or that nobody else knows? Something like that. I mean, there's so many different questions we can ask. And then you'll find out things about people that you just actually had no idea. So what are some other ideas?
Yeah, I have a deck of cards on my website at drstephjohnson.com. Under resources, there's these various decks. You can download them. They're free. And they just have these questions, just like you just asked.
Oh, that's great.
Questions. I think my favorite right now is returning to work after COVID. And the reason it's my favorite is because it gives you a reason why you're doing this. But the COVID situation, it's like this is new territory. The fact that I don't know how you experience a global pandemic, I don't, because it's never happened before. So you just have to ask. And so it opens the door to have a conversation about how has your work experience been amidst this pandemic? Mm-hmm. What are things from this experience that you would want to bring back to the
right.
workplace in terms of changes to the work format? You know,
right.
how does this affect your career aspirations? Whatever it is, there's bunches of cards.
There's lots of questions to ask around that for sure. So let's get into that, because I do want to do a little application. See, my view on this is that a lot of us are not necessarily you and me, but just generally us as a people. Are waiting around a lot, and we're waiting for to go back to the office. We're waiting for COVID to subside. There's just a lot of waiting.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, this whole time, because we were going to go back to office in 3 weeks, then it was going to be 3 months, and we just keep putting it off. And really, we were really, really sure about July. The tech folks I know were like, okay, July's it, July 1st, kids are out of school and, summer's here, we're coming back to the office. Obviously, that's not happening. I mean, now companies are pushing out to, January 22. Of course, that'll be flu season. So then, we'll have an excuse then too. But, anyway, they just keep pushing out. But meanwhile, there's not been a lot of skill building necessarily with how we are doing now, because we keep waiting for this time when we can all go back to the office, at least go back like 2 or 3 days a week. So I don't know anyone that's going back 5. Like,
that's right.
I don't know. So how do we, there's two questions I have that are related. How do we help people be more skillful about being online, whether it's on the phone or online or on Zoom, in terms of their inclusivity? And then also, as these are really separate questions, but related, as we're going back, when we do go back, and there are some people that are back, what are some things that are particular about that we want to make sure that we're doing to, again, be good inclusifiers? I'm going to use that word now a lot.
Yeah, I sure love it. So I would say read Erica Dewan's book on digital body language that came out this year.
Oh, wow.
I have a lot of skill building tips for just communicating online in your virtual presence. I think that's helpful for anyone. I think people are investing at this point in becoming better communicators online, because we waited for a long time and now the cat's out of the bag. We're not going back. So full time, so we might as well get good at this. And there's new technologies emerging, definitely communication technologies. I feel like my Zoom and WebEx and Teams is constantly updating with new accessibility options. So it, transcribes what I'm saying, so people who can't hear as well can easily read it. So I think there is an investment in that. I feel like the one thing that should stick around is when it comes to workplace decision making, we're having a meeting on a task. This isn't bonding. We're not getting coffee, but We're trying to make decisions. I think we should stick with virtual. There's essentially always been, and now always will be, some people who aren't in the room, right? Like, I just saw a session earlier today.
It's hard to have, even with the new thing, yeah, it's hard to have everybody in the room ever, you know, all the time.
Yeah. And there's people who are like, you know, FYI, I've been in Singapore for the last decade and no one's ever cared that I was, didn't hear what you said and, you know, was on the phone going, excuse me, can you hear me? So now we know this is going to be happening. So I will follow, you know, what I've heard for like Sun Microsystems and, you know, Oracle now has always had these remote teams and globally dispersed teams. And so they have taken meetings, like even if you and I are sitting in our office together in California, but one of our team members has to work remotely today for whatever reason, we just take the meeting separately. I'll be in my office, you're in your office.
Right.
And we're all...
Everybody's equal. Everyone has an equitable situation, yeah.
You got it. And then you don't have to wear the mask, right? Because you're not two people in a room. And right. And there's frankly so many ways that, to me, this is more equitable than all of the things that we experience in meeting rooms. The person with the loudest voice is heard, the person who takes up the most space, the person who sits at the head of the table. Like, let's face it, we're 6-9 little boxes on screen, right? So it's a lot of ways it creates greater equity. And if I want to chime in and I don't feel like I have a voice, I can just add it in the chat. Like, there's multiple lines of communication going. I think it was always better. We just didn't know it. Right. So right. Now, if you believe that so far, then it's like, okay, so then how can you really use this format to be effective? And I use this kind of multi-step process of the experience is different. And so we want to start with sending out questions to people in advance and so that they can respond. And I actually want them to send me their responses and I'm going to curate a discussion around their responses. And when we get into the room, I'm going to make sure I check in with each person, you know, have everyone contribute. I do popcorn, but you know, I might say, this is how I'm doing. Sue, I'm going to call on you. Sue, you can call on Judy. You just let each person call on someone. And then you dive into your curated discussion on topics and really focus on, you know, we start with the stuff there was a lot of agreement on. Like, okay, we all agreed that we should expand operations into Venezuela. So now rather than listening to 20 minutes of vehement agreement on that topic, I agree because of this reason, because people just like want to share and they don't know that everyone already agrees with them. You start out with everyone agreed on this. Here's some reasons. Now tell me why you disagree.
Right. Or does anybody have an issue? Is anybody on this particular topic, does anybody have an issue with it? You just assume, they make the assumption that people are in agreement. So then, but you give people room to disagree with them. Because I think because if we say, is everybody in agreement? It's harder to say no. Whereas if you say, does anybody have a disagreement with this? You're opening it up so that people can disagree if they want to.
Yeah, like demand it. Now I want to hear the reason why. Yeah. If whether you're making it up to be a devil's advocate or whether you really believe that, but just didn't have a chance to
debate. Yeah.
Yeah, it's perfect. Yeah. And then one of the things where you disagree, right? And you just save tons of time because
you
didn't spend all the time vehemently agreeing. Right. And you set some norms about we want disagreement. This is good. And then you can make decisions. And I'll say like another thing that I love about the Zoom format, and I encourage leaders to do this all the time. Maybe tell your coaching clients this too. I have them tape meetings.
Yes.
Everyone knows they're taping it, right? So tell everyone. And then go back and watch it and look at what are you doing that's allowing people to contribute? Who's getting spoken over? Who's doing all, you know, raising their hand all the time and whatever it might be. Like, use the features that, because it's recorded, you can go back and watch it.
That's a great feature.
Yes. And then you can use the chat. The chat's like another great feature to say, you know, I actually know this is a topic that Sue would be great to speak to. I'm not sure why you're not speaking and I don't want to embarrass you, but I can direct message you. Isn't that amazing? Or even if I'm like, hey, I'm going to say something, I want you to back me up or back me up if you agree. Like there's all this opportunity for covert communication to really, you can use it for evil, but I'm saying using it for good. Drive inclusion.
Exactly. So this is great. I want to stop for a second and give people a chance to speak. Speaking of.
Yeah.
And so you're welcome to basically go on video, which will mean that you're raising your hand and you can speak and ask Stephanie a question. We can certainly have a discussion about it. After this, we're going to go into assuming that we are doing what you're saying, which I happen to agree with as well, where most of our meetings will be on Zoom. How do we connect off of Zoom when we're either virtual or at the office? Yeah. So we'll talk about that in a second. But who has a question or a comment so far? Okay. So can you please talk about how to effectively manage up to support more inclusive practices among supervisors, leaders above you on the org chart? That's a great question. That's
really helpful. But yeah, to expand on that question a little bit, we are doing, at my organization, we're doing some kind of reorganization and rethinking about how decisions get made and trying to move towards a structure where there's not just one like executive or leadership team making all of the decisions, but having there be kind of multiple area focuses of teams that make decisions in those areas. But it is challenging for the staff who are coming into the decision-making structure, I think, to encourage more inclusive practices among those who have been above them on the org chart, even though those people at the top do want to be more inclusive. It's like nobody knows how. Okay. So it'd be great if you could speak to that a little bit.
Absolutely. Thanks for the clarification on that.
Thanks.
The broader context. We'll send them all Inclusify books, of course. We'll immediately solve all your problems. I guess I think of two things. One, some of it's just role modeling. And there's this thing that happens as you become more senior in your role. More people are coming to you for answers, so you become less good at asking questions. And so sometimes it's just like needing to practice that muscle again, because people, before they became that senior role, they were one of the people asking questions, right? So it's not like they can't do it. They just need to practice it, warm it up again. So by doing that as yourself, if you're not one of the senior people you're talking about, but if you're in the room, you can role model the behaviors. And it's like, if you see someone speaking over another person or not letting them finish, you can say, you know, I really wanted to hear that person finish their thought. Can you pause on your thought and we can finish hearing them speak? Because what they're saying is really important. Or if you haven't heard from someone in the room, you can raise that and say, you know, we really haven't heard from Kaylee today. And what she has to say is really important because she's been leading up for years. And so I think her perspective is really valuable. And then when you start doing that, what I found is it totally catches on. The other people start doing it too. If you want to go Obama White House style, you can actually form like an agreement to do this. Like they called it amplification, and the Obama staffers made this pact to do that for each other, to try to bring out people's opinions and support each other. So you can do that. But even if you didn't, it just starts to catch on. And then it's hard for the supervisor not to do it when everyone else is kind of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If that's like too small of a, you know, behavioral nudge for you, then I think the next best thing is to form a collaboration with maybe a couple other people on your team and go to the supervisor with these very specific suggestions. Like, hey, I have this, you know, great knowledge and training and skills around creating inclusive work environments. Can I lead a team meeting? Can we three organize a different way of approaching this next meeting to get more voices on the table? And actually, like, do it. You'll like assert your leadership and do some teaching, upward teaching at the same time.
Okay. So in your book, you talk about these great concepts. You always want to stand out and to fit in. I mean, I think that they can be diametrically opposed, but hopefully they're not. And I think you've done a good job of kind of molding those or blending those together. So can you speak to that and how we can blend those? And also, and I want to then apply it to what we're going through right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So it's just this idea. There's a theory of optimal distinctiveness.
Got it.
It's the idea that we want to be distinct. Like this isn't true for all animals, but it is true for humans, right? We don't want to be the same as everyone else. We want to have our own stripes or, you know, be our unique selves, and our identities are important to us.
Yeah, brand. Yeah, we want to stand out. Yeah.
Exactly. So you want to be distinct, but only to an optimal level, because you don't want to stand out so much that you're not accepted into the pack. Because just as much as you want to stand out, like, we really want to be accepted and fit into. Belonging is like a basic human need. We are a social animal. We want to be part of the group. So it seems like a tough balance because you want to do both. But it's, on the flip side, it's actually really natural if you can just start from the place of valuing these distinct people and the fact that people are bringing different skills, and rather than falling into the trap of saying, you know, we want clones, everyone to be the same, recognizing that if everyone's the same, we're probably missing out on a lot of information. And instead take the perspective of like, we're trying to build the best team. Like if you're trying to build a sports team, I'm going to use a sports analogy. If you're trying to build a football team, you don't bring on all quarterbacks, right? There's different roles that need to be filled and different attributes that people need to have. And so when you're putting together the best team, it's really not about figuring out who's the best person for the job and then replicating them 5 times. It's about figuring out what person is going to add the most to our current makeup of our team.
Right. Well, and I also, if you extend that even further and not even use positions, but you await a prima donna, like there's in sports teams, especially basketball, there's typically a prima donna that stands out. Okay. And it's okay to have a few of them.
Right? Yeah.
If you have more than a couple, then it's a problem.
That's right.
And if you have also a team that has prima, people that are like, if you take the Giants, for example, people who, like a team that's, very, very even. Like there's not like the obvious prima donna, the one that's getting paid a ton, you know, and then you have even more of a situation where fitting in is more important and is part of the main reason why they're being so successful. But there is a balance because you can't be, you can't have too much. You have to have some ego, right? Some, some distinction, right? How do you suggest that people strike this balance? How do you do that on Zoom? And then how you do that off of Zoom. So like there's ways to connect and just to do these things, to stand out and to fit in. So the connecting is more of the fitting in, but the being distinct is more of the standing out. How do you do these things on Zoom? And then how do you do these things off?
Yeah. So in Zoom world, you know, I think it is about really valuing the different perspectives that people bring. And so that is like trying to create dissension, trying to ask, demand, I want a different perspective right now. And creating a psychologically safe environment where people can say an idea and maybe off the wall or you know, not your typical idea, but it's valued and people aren't, you humiliate people or punish them for their idea. And then you're never going to get a creative idea again. So making sure that it's when I say you value it, like you really value it, you're trying to get the ideas out there and then you're thankful for people sharing it. Even if you don't go with that idea, like maybe it changes the way you thought about something. Or maybe it comes back in later. And so valuing that. And maybe this isn't what you mean, but the other off Zoom, maybe the thing that comes to mind for me is that there's still a need for like the human connection, as you mentioned earlier. And so we need to still be finding ways to bond. Maybe it's, if we really can't be face to face, it can be, I've seen a lot of people doing book clubs, like anti-racist book clubs. So it has the value of difference woven into the fact that you're about to take a shared experience. And you can do, it doesn't have to be an anti-racist book club. It could be, you know, you can watch movies or read romance novels or whatever, maybe not romance novels, but whatever you want to build connection with your team members. A lot of organizations before COVID were investing in cultural events. You know, there's ways to do that outside of COVID too. Like you can have groups each week share something about themselves or individuals, things that you don't know about them so you can learn about people. It's like super fascinating. We love to learn about humans. And then you're starting to make people feel connected for their difference. Isn't that like, that's the magic.
Well, yes, they're embracing difference as something interesting and curious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're curious. Yeah. So let's talk about what you just said, because I think it's a really important point. I have an example of a client who's in D.C., her team, currently, she's always had a remote team. So it's not, so COVID has not made that much of a difference, but she also has people in DC as well. So she was noticing that she went to a new team. This is a huge company. So she went to a new team and she was noticing that nobody was in DC. So she was going to actually hire, and her next couple of hires were going to be in DC. Cause she was like, you know what? We can meet outside and we can have a park walk or a Starbucks gathering or whatever. So I think I'd rather just be able to do that. I'm like, yeah. So I was really much encouraging her to do that. If Zoom is all you have, then there are ways to linger and there are ways to connect that aren't work. That I think beyond the let's have a party on Zoom or let's have a games night or something like that. I'm just talking about having a walk and actually calling somebody on the phone and not on Zoom. So you're connecting with them in Slack or on phone or whatever. Or you're doing that right after the meeting or whatever. So I think that there's those things. But I also think that there's things we can do that are creative that allow us to be together. I mean, we could still be outside and be safe. So what's your thinking about that?
Yeah, I mean, I love your idea. I think sitting outside, I had a class meet. We all got picnic blankets, and so we were still distanced because your picnic blanket was big and had lunch together. We used our phones to communicate and posted little videos on, I think it's Instagram, which, like, I did not even have an Instagram at this point, just to, like, connect. And, like, even though you're not this close to someone, like, you can still feel really connected because you're having a shared experience. I think it's just like what you said. You got to get it. We're going to need to be creative because I think this is going to last for a while. And in some ways it's, you know, maybe it's better when it comes to equity because there's always been people off at social events together where others aren't involved. You know, it's like the bad end is like strip clubs and like, I'm not making this up. Like this is a thing that happens in corporate America, the golf course, like playing a game of pickup basketball. Those were not inclusive events. Right. So
it can be, but not the strip club, but I mean, the camp, but the golf and they can be, you can go to a public course.
Sure. You can Sorry? For sure. Yeah. But maybe it's not, if that's all you do,
right.
It's not inclusive. Right.
Oh, totally. Like, totally.
So right. I think in some ways this has given us a good opportunity to be creative about new ways to build connection. And that's why I like the book club. You can stream Netflix together, like have it at the exact same time.
Right.
Even though you're apart. In being creative about finding ways to do things virtually, I think if you always keep that lens of equity and inclusion and keep it like who's showing up and who's not, these people never show up for our 7 o'clock PM meeting. Maybe there's a reason for that. You know, like maybe they're on the East Coast and that's really late, or maybe they have their parents and they have young children and they're putting to bed at 7 o'clock. So just like being mindful of those things, because it's like, I feel like when the workplace is built, you know, in the Industrial Revolution, it was built for a very specific demographic. It wasn't built to be inclusive, right? The vast majority of the workforce were men and they had stay-at-home partners, and it wasn't designed to be a place where anyone could be equally successful. Here's the thing. We get to rebuild it because it's gone.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think that we're in this for a while and we can refresh it. I mean, we don't have to do what we were doing. Like, we can make this completely different.
It can be better, and it can be a workplace that really works for everyone. And I think that's includes things like the social events. Like maybe it's fewer happy hours and more outdoor coffee hours and walks. I live in Boulder, Colorado, so outdoor walks are like, you know, a daily mainstay. Like people are always doing this. That's not true everywhere. So
well, it's true here, it's true there. I mean, obviously in the dead of winter, Chicago and Minnesota can't do that.
Ice fishing.
You know, yeah, exactly. It's a little, you have to be a little bit maybe more creative about, I think that's, I was talking to somebody and they're saying, yeah, the being mean in the garage, you know, was getting still too cold. So, you know, so I had the garage door open, you're outside, but it was still too cold. So yeah, I think you have to get really creative. And, I don't know if there's like some things you can share from you said that you've got some cards online, you've got some things online that you might be able to share. You've got an Inclusify leadership matrix. Maybe you can share that too.
Yeah, for sure. So all of that is, the matrix is at inclusifyer.com. And that's an assessment to tell you kind of where your leadership strengths are and how you become more inclusive, like capitalize on your strengths, but pivot on things that are areas of opportunity for you. And then there's just lots of resources, inclusive hiring guide, how to make workplaces work for parents, conferences that are more inclusive. I mean, there's just a lot of different resources that people can use. But the best thing I would say to do is actually to create a group, a task force, or whatever it is to start solving these ideas for yourself, because just doing that is building connection.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't know the best way to come up with social events for your group because I don't really know you, but you know you, and you're going to have the most creative ideas because you have all these different perspectives sitting there, and they're going to be ideas that work for you.
Right. Well, and I think that not trying to be, as a leader, not trying to be, you know, the be all end all. You can ask your team. You know, that's
absolutely
to include them to say, okay, so like, you want to get together, you know, next Friday and for an hour, and what are some ideas about what we could do?
Right. Yeah. Or even maybe, so we have, you know, 8 people on our team. We're going to do something each biweekly or something every 2 weeks. Each week, someone different gets to plan it.
Yeah. which is a great idea.
Think of how creative and the fun ideas that people would come up with.
Yeah, I've got a group that I've got two groups I started during COVID, and one of them is a coaching group. So we always have an article. So we always have some content that we read each time. And then another group that I have, I started was with my best friends, and we started every Monday. And so it started out me asking, having a question. You know, it could be anything like, what's the silver lining? At the beginning, it was like, what's the silver lining of COVID? And what are you doing to exercise? And, you know, those kinds of questions. And now we're meeting every other week, and now everybody comes with a question. Like, in other words, you have your night, and you come with a question. And so it's been, so everyone's got to facilitate over and over, you know, and it's been great because people come up with the darndest questions. I mean, they're really interesting questions around like, just where do you want to go? Like the place you wanted to always go to, you've never been able to. And the other night I did, would you rather? And that was fun because it was a series of questions. But the last question I'm going to leave you guys with, which is, would you rather end hatred or hunger?
Oh, man.
Yeah, tough one, huh? But there's no right answer, obviously. But this is the kind of thing that I think is important, like getting creative about just curiosity, like, because we found out a lot about each other when we asked that kind of question, hugely.
So. Well, I think that's the point. Yeah, these aren't like yes or no questions.
No.
They're getting people to open up and talk. And
right.
That's building that empathy and connection. Like there's certain things that you get from a face-to-face. It's like people's, I don't know what it is, their aura, just like the way they move.
Their energy. Yeah.
Their energy. So you don't get that from Zoom. But you have to be intentional about going deep.
Yeah, because you're not necessarily gonna, it's not gonna be offered. It's like, yeah. You know, you have to go a little extra. All this takes extra energy. And I think that's the key.
I bet you felt so energized after that conversation. So it took energy, but I bet afterward you're like, dang, I did this.
Well, it's some of them. I mean, it's like every time it's different, right? So it makes it interesting. But yes, kind of. And that, well, actually, you know what? Interestingly enough, I do feel energy in them, but I feel sad. I kind of feel sad sometimes afterwards because I wanted to keep going.
Oh, yeah.
There's a little sense of sadness. Yeah. So that's also there.
Keep them coming back for more.
Yeah. Well, fortunately now we're all, you know, now we're able to see each other more. So it's easier. But at the beginning, it felt like we're in a dungeon, right? We're like, oh, can't see each other.
Yes. My home base, my home office became the basement because it was quiet. It was like,
yes,
far enough away from the kids. They weren't on every phone call, just like in the background. And I really did feel like I was sent to the dungeon for a year and 3 months.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We're coming out.
Yeah, it's certainly better now, and it feels. But we still have a little bit more to go here. So, thank you so much for being connecting and just having a wonderful conversation. I'm just gonna talk a little bit about your book again here. So you can go to Stephanie's website, it's Dr. Steph Johnson. So that's stefjohnson.com. And you can also go to inclusifybook.com. On Instagram and Twitter is Dr. Steph Johnson. And then, of course, Dr. Steph Johnson on LinkedIn as well. So again, the book is Inclusify, the Power of Uniqueness and Belonging to Build Innovative Teams. And you can get that, of course, on Amazon and other places. So I just want to really, again, appreciate your candor and your energy. I appreciate it a lot. And there's a lot of good ideas. It sounds like there's a lot more good ideas on your website as well. So I want to encourage everybody to do that. And next month on September 28th at 12 p.m. Pacific, we've got my brother. He's my consulting brother. He's the guy who I go to. We commiserate a lot. Steve Cadigan. He's the author of a new book called Workquake, Embracing the Aftershocks of COVID-19. To create a better model of working. He was able to pivot and actually write the book during COVID. And it's about the future of work. And I just want to encourage everybody to come on and listen to what Steve has to say. And if anything else, it'll be funny because he and I are, as I said, brother and sister. So we have fun together. So again, Stephanie, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
My pleasure. Thanks for the energizing conversation from you today and just for your kind introduction and your great questions and for those who showed up and those who watch.
Thanks everybody for being here. Appreciate it.